Welcome to the Regarding Leadership Podcast, a podcast around the table. In this podcast, we have conversations and content regarding leadership that is healthy and heartfelt, proven and practical for leaders who are actually leading. I'm your host, Ryan D.B. Kimmel, and I am blessed to have you with us. Hey, so whenever you are listening to this, I pray that this finds you doing well. Want to let you know we're going to do something a little different. We're actually going to pull out a conversation from the archive. It's a conversation that we had a while back. I know you'll be blessed by it. Enjoy.
We have our good friend Ethan Ezekian with us. Welcome, Ethan.
What's up, guys? Glad to be here.
Great to have you. Ethan is a church planter, planted a church called the Union Church over in Brighton, Michigan, just a few years ago. And so we're excited to talk today about what that's like, what it's like to do church planning, and get to talk through those aspects of leadership happening in the church. So how about to start this way? Ethan, you want to just tell us a little bit about Union Church and what you're doing over there and how you got there?
Yeah, sure thing. Union Church is a two and a half year old church plant. We planted in the fall of 2021 in Brighton, Michigan. Our area, we tend to refer to it as a county rather than as towns because it's several towns that kind of bleed together. But this is the area that I grew up in, and went away for college and several years of ministry elsewhere. But, eventually the Lord called us back to plant. We planted here with a team, and right now our church is living as a 2 year old church. We've got a fair amount of people, about 100 people who gather on Sundays and trying to make disciples here in Livingston County, Michigan. So,
and what led you? You want to just walk us through a little bit? So, actually, the three of us have a lot of history together in different ways. Mm-hmm. One of those ways being that we all got to work together at Peace Church at different times. And so, Ethan, you want to just walk us through how'd you go from being a pastor once upon a time here at Peace Church to being the pastor of Union Church out there?
Well, yeah, John and I actually met in college for the first time. And that's where my story with church planting begins too. I grew up in the church and had a vibrant relationship with Jesus heading into college. But in college, I had what I think of as kind of a theological awakening. And it was this awakening around Reformed theology and the importance of the local church. And along with that, kind of imported with that, was a desire or an interest in church planting. I like to say that I was interested in church planting like some guys get interested in fantasy football. So there are some guys who just like download every podcast and they've got so many opinions about how the game is played, but in reality, they are not really playing the game. And that was how I cared about church planting. I loved listening to the podcasts and I had strong opinions about how the game should be played and who the key players were, et cetera. But it wasn't until several years later, in 2018, in November of 2018, I sat across the table from a really wise leader named Ryan Kimmel. Ryan knew that my wife and I had just been in a season of just being stirred up from the Lord. We were kind of at a fork in a road in our life and in the life of our family. We weren't sure where the Lord was calling us next, but we felt like he was going to call us somewhere. And it had been about 6 months of that. And I had been hashing that out with Ryan. And Ryan said, dude, you're always talking about church planting and you just need to get some courage and do it. And so that was a really providential conversation because, like I said, that was November of 2018. The next week, we went back home to visit family in Brighton and Howell, Michigan, our hometown, for Thanksgiving. And that week of visiting home was when we found out things about the mission field in our region that I just didn't know, having grown up here as a church youth group rat kid here in Livingston County. I just thought, everybody here looks like me, thinks like me. Of course, we're all Christians. And I found out then that really it's about like 89% of our county of 190,000 people are not connected to Bible believing evangelical churches. And so the Lord kind of planted a strong desire for the gospel to spread here in my hometown. So that's the short version of how the fire for church planting really got kindled in our lives.
As we start talking about the topic of church planting, why don't we just start here? Ethan, why should anybody plant a church?
So that's a good question. Anybody shouldn't plant a church is my answer. You know, just like ministry in the context in which you guys are in, stepping into ministry is a calling, and stepping into church planting is a particular calling, and not everybody's called or gifted for that type of ministry. However, I'll add to that, that every Christian should care about church planting. And I have lots of reasons for that, but I think the most important reason is that Jesus cares about church planting. And the most clear way that I can tell you that Jesus cares about church planting is because he gave his church a mission. And I would argue that it is a mission to do church planting. So you're probably familiar with Matthew 28, where Jesus says, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and Holy Spirit and teaching them. And in that verse, Jesus doesn't say to his church to go and make disciples. To go and make converts. He tells them to go and make disciples. And he tells them, as you make disciples, do things that have to take place in the context of a community. Do things like baptism and teaching. And then if you look at the thrust of the rest of the New Testament, you really just can't get away from the fact that the whole of the Christian life has to take place within the context of a community. There are over 50 commands to one another's in the New Testament. So love one another, be hospitable to one another, et cetera, et cetera. One of the places that I just preached from is 1 Peter chapter 1. Peter says, since you've been born again, love one another. And then just a few verses later, he says, put away slander, put away deceit. And then he says something really striking. He says, do all this so that you can grow up into the salvation that you've been given. In other words, like maturity, growing up into your salvation as a Christian happens within this context where we are practicing horizontal love, not just vertical love for God, but horizontal love for each other. And so that's a long-winded way of saying if you want to step into the fullness of what God has for you as a Christian, then you're going to be a part of a local church body where you can create an ecosystem to practice those horizontal loves and commands that God's given you. And so if you want to make disciples and if you want to mature Christians, you need to be about planting churches to reach those people. And so that's my foundational theological reason. I also have a quote that every person who's ever thought about church planting ever has probably read. And it's from a great article called Why Plant Churches by Gandalf himself, Tim Keller. And so let me just read that quote to you. It's a great article to read. He's really unpacking. He's distilling down a lot of research around church planting and the effectiveness by which it reaches people. And his simple conclusion is that the vigorous, continual planting of new congregations is the single most crucial strategy for numerical growth of the body of Christ in a city and the continual corporate renewal and revival of the existing churches in a city. Nothing else, he says, not crusades, not outreach programs, not parachurch ministries, not growing megachurches, not congregational consulting, not church renewal processes, nothing else will have the consistent impact of dynamic, extensive church planting.
I love that. That's awesome. We're right there with you, obviously. We had the privilege ourselves at Peace Church of getting to plant a campus that will grow into an independent church over the next 3 to 5 years. We believe the way to make disciples of Jesus is to preach the gospel and gather those disciples into churches. That's awesome, Ethan. Praise God for that. So we'd love to talk about lots of different aspects of the church planting experience, how you got there, as well as what it's like to do live leadership there. Before we get quite to your experience there, tell us a little bit about the training process you went through to get there. What was maybe the most beneficial thing that you got out of the training experience you went through to plant?
Sure. Yeah, my story isn't everybody's story, but for me, after I had that crucial conversation with Ryan and we did a lot of praying and discerning over the next couple months, we realized pretty quickly we feel a burden to get to the place where we can plant a church in our hometown, but we're not quite sure the roadmap to get there, the how-to specifically. And so we began to look for places that we could get trained for church planting. And through just another set of providential conversations and a lot of prayer, we wound up being at the church planting program at the Village Church in Dallas, Texas. And we spent 18 months there. Really, it was a season of rest for our family in a lot of ways. I was a pastor at a growing church for several years prior to being called to church plant. And all of a sudden I was basically an intern again. There was nothing, no ministries resting on my shoulders. I was given a name tag and said, "Hey, go greet people in the lobby" on my first Sunday. And that was disorienting in the best kind of way. For 18 months, I didn't have to make ministry happen. I could just focus on what God was calling us to do. And then, the content of that training was also really crucial because, it was a recalibration for me. I was eager to talk about the work of starting a church, and instead we talked about my heart before the Lord and the health of my family and the vibrancy of my marriage. And then we began to talk about things like contextualization and sharing the gospel and what it means to appoint elders and all these different pieces of ministry. But it was a slow process of discernment for us and continual training. And after that 18 months, the church that we were at in Texas sent us back to Michigan to start our church. So, like I said, that's not the path that every church planter takes, but it was the path that my family needed. It was a season of recalibration and retraining, and we would not be where we are today without that. So highly recommend it.
So let me ask you this question. When you went to Texas to do this training and go through this program, did you have the location in mind where you felt called to plant? Is that something you went in with a closed hand or an open hand? And I think, you know, when we talk about church planting, we talk about, you know, the two L's, the leader and the location. Who's the planter and where are you planting? And so when you went in, like, I knew because we had lots of conversations together at the very deepest of the heart level. And I knew you had a strong call for your hometown. But when you went to formalize and get church planting training, did you go with saying, "This is where I'm going no matter what"? Should a church planter have that sort of conviction?
I did not have a lot of openness to any location. I felt particularly called to a specific place. But that a lot of that has to do with my temperament and gifting. So some guys are going to be like Apostle Paul's. They're just going to want to go and get the gospel somewhere, get it off the ground and hand it off to somebody else. Some guys are just going to be way more adventurous than me. I have a friend who he actually went through the same program that I went through, on a different, you know, he just finished it and he just moved to a new city where he knows nobody. And it's a totally secular city. So, different people are going to be called to different things. It really depends on your family and your kind of bent, how God's wired you and, what doors the Lord opens up. So I don't think having a strong burden for a place, let me say it this way. I don't think not having a particular vision for a particular place disqualifies you from thinking about church planting.
Okay. That's the kind of wondering. Cause I mean, I knew you had a place in mind that you felt real called to, but then you also hear those stories of those guys just putting out a map and taking a dart and just throwing it and going there. But I think that's really helpful. You go back to what you said earlier. That's, you kind of have to follow God's call and discern what that is for you and what that looks like. So
as we start talking about some of the live leadership issues you're facing, you want to give us just a picture when you started at Union Church, what did you guys start with? You know, what did the launch team look like? What'd you have for a location? What'd you have for leadership?
So just the way the question is phrased makes me laugh, because starting a church is kind of like having a baby. Like you know, it's coming and it's just growing and growing and growing. And it's like asking, like, at which point did your baby become a baby? So I'll tell you what we did right away. Immediately, my wife and I knew that we were called to plant a church and had a strong desire to build a team of ministers to go with us. And there was a particular couple that we worked with at Peace Church, actually. Their names are Kyle and Ashley, and we pursued them to plant Union Church with us. Kyle is actually another pastor at Union Church, and we divide the preaching and we divide the responsibility for leading ministries. And I would not be... alive as a church planter today if I didn't have a co-pastor to elder with me. And I'm not recommending that as a model for everybody, but for me, that was what we needed. And I think the principle to take away from that is you got to start building your team right away as a church planter. And for us, those were the first team members we recruited. And then as we finished up our training program in Texas, we were doing some recruiting, but we really began to build a team through hosting interest meetings in our city and kind of spreading the word via social media and through any sort of organic relationships that we had. And through that process, we were doing that in earnest for about 6 months. We gathered about 45 adults, and all of those adults brought with them, most of them brought with them, you know, groups of children as well. Most of them were couples. And then we had this weird in-between phase as a church. Again, every church plant's timeline is unique, but for us, we were still kind of gathering. We knew we were going to be meeting in a local elementary school. And we weren't going to be doing that until the fall of that year, September of 21. But we had this group of people, many of them, we were just coming out of COVID. And so many of them were kind of church homeless, and we were in this weird Wild West period. And so we had a member of our core team who had a pole barn, and it was summertime. And so we called it Almost Church, and we would just get together on Sunday mornings, and I'd preach a simple sermon, and we'd have an unplugged worship set. And through that, that kind of began to have traction and gain momentum. And so we added to our number coming to Almost Church. And so by the time we launched, we probably had between 55 and 65 people kind of committed to being a part of our church plant. And then in terms of other resources that we had, and we were doing a lot of fundraising, we had to gather supplies for portable churches, which would be like, you know, you're setting up mobile classrooms and you're buying a sound system and all those things. Honestly, things that if we got into the details, you'd realize the shallowness of my expertise on. So I'll just stop there.
That's awesome. That helps give a picture of kind of what you went through to get it started and what it was like when you finally arrived at that place, when you went from Almost Church to official church, I guess, if we call it that.
Yeah.
Sweet. That's super helpful. So thinking about the experience so far, what has been maybe the greatest thing? What's been the best thing or most positive thing you've experienced?
Yeah, that was a good question for me to reflect on. Because there's a lot of hard in church planting, and often the hard is shoved up into your face. But I'll give you two answers. One is deep and spiritual, and the other is superficial. The best thing about church planting so far is seeing transformation up close. I just remember feeling like, you know, in my previous ministry roles, I was doing real discipleship. I was doing real leadership. And I loved what I did, but there was a large portion of my responsibilities that just were given over to making church happen, which isn't a bad thing. But the Lord was just really stirring up in me that I wanted to see more discipleship happening in the lives of people. And so to be able to watch as people go through pain or recognize sin in their life or confess ugly things to you, but then to watch the Lord bring about restoration and healing and transformation, to get to baptize. Maybe my favorite story in our church, there's so many stories of transformation, but this one is just so cool. I'll briefly tell you, we had one guy who's a international person begin coming to our church. He's from Brazil. He came to know Christ in our church. He got baptized. Now he's doing Zoom Bible studies with his family in Brazil. And he's prayed with his brother to accept the Lord. And he's working on his sister and his mom. And to me, it's just like, Lord, I have no right to be able to be a part of this. Like, it's all, nothing is resting on my leadership or my skill or my talent, but I've gotten to see the Lord make a name for himself in this man's life and, you know, thousands of miles away in South America. So that kind of thing is awesome. And then I think the more superficial answer, just real quickly, is that, so my background in ministry is in leading worship. I'm a musician. One of the things I think about when I'm evaluating a song for church is if I if I take all the cool stuff out of this recording and I just strip it down to a guitar and my voice, is the congregation going to be able to sing along? Because that's my goal. And it's kind of the same with church planting. There is an opportunity in church planting to strip away all the extras and just get to see clearly again what it means to make disciples and be on mission in community for the glory of God. That, you know, you can have coffee and sound systems, and those things are good graces and blessings from God, but you get to just see the core of what we're about as God's people. And that's something I will value for a long time.
I know why you said it, but I don't think that's superficial. That's actually, that's really insightful.
Well, let's talk about the less exciting, less fun stuff. You want to tell us about some of the challenges you faced and how your leadership has grown so far through that?
Yeah, this is really easy because it's the same answer just flipped on its head. So the hardest thing is seeing transformation up close. You know, I mean, I just, without naming names or getting too particular, the last 3 days for me were meeting with people whose marriage is in trouble, and pinch hitting for volunteers who get sick, and caring for people whose family members are in the hospital, and just kind of pouring out when I would rather not pour out of my energy, you know, and then in all of that, like serving people and then watching people still choose rebellion against the Lord. Often that's hard. It's not meaningless, but it's hard.
I like what you said, the notion of transformation. I think we talk about the positive outcome of that on the end, but we forget like what are they transforming from? What was the place of, what was their life like? What was the sin that they were in? So the notion of like seeing transformation up close, we'd say, yeah, it's a real beautiful thing, but I like how you reminded us. Yeah. But that also means you saw where they came from, the work that God brought them out of, the work of God and what he brought them out of.
I mean, we believe that if they belong to Jesus, he's going to complete the good work he began in them. And so we can be assured transformation is going to happen. And it's just whether or not we get to see the zoomed out picture that God's working on. Sometimes we're just deep in the valley with people and it's tiring. The other hard thing, I told you, it's a flip side of what I shared before of the stripping away and getting to see just what makes a church a church. You start to miss having nice things. and that's hard. You know, you think we set up and tear down every Sunday as a church, and God's provided for us in so many ways. And yet you get to 1 p.m. on a Sunday and you've loaded the last thing into the trailer and you just pray like, Lord, let it be worth something because this stinks, you know, or, you know, we're a church plant. Thankfully we have two pastors, but before that I was on large church staffs where we had specialized ministers doing cool things. And you just have to get by with less, which is totally okay. It's probably a good thing, but you just miss it sometimes.
So I think we kind of covered this, but maybe just put some definition to it. What are some things that you wish other people knew about church planting, but they probably don't?
I have a two-tiered answer to this question. And the first tier is, I wish people knew that the local church is irreplaceable in the life of a Christian. I saw a really well-meaning post from somebody on social media recently, and it was just a screenshot of their church's live stream. And the caption was, I'm so glad I get to go to church even when I'm not at home. And I love the heart behind that. And yet part of me is just brokenhearted because so many Christians in our culture are buying into the lie that we are just brains on sticks. And so that going to church just means like having your mind stimulated with Jesus things. And really we're embodied people. God made us with minds and bodies, and we're meant to gather in person with each other so that we can be formed into the image of Christ together. And when you're not doing that, you're not a part of the local church. So even well-meaning Christians don't really understand the irreplaceability. That's not a word, but you know, like the the importance of the local church, and then building on that, if Christians really understood the vital importance of the local church, then they would know and be and care more and be more informed about the work of starting new churches so that more people can have that embodied experience in a community of faith. Because so much of our culture, even in the Christian world, even among churchy folk, is treating their faith like treating church like it's a vendor of religious goods and services.
I think, you know, as I reflect on my last 3 years as lead pastor and the years and years I've had of ministry before that, just thinking about serving in two different churches, growing up in another church, I think one of the things that we, the collective American church, we have not done a good job of talking about ourselves and what the church is and instilling a good ecclesiology into the hearts mm-hmm. of people. And I think we're seeing the negative effects of that play out in real life before us. Because we don't like to talk about ourselves. We like to talk about Jesus. We like to talk about what he's doing in this world. But we're his bride. And that means something when we gather and we're meant to gather. And I just don't think the church has done a good job preaching about the church for the last generation. And I think we're seeing some negative effects play out. And so I loved your answer to that.
So, Ethan, if you got a young man listening to this who has some ministry experience and is thinking about planting a church, feeling maybe called, what's one thing, particularly about leadership, that he is not planning for that he should be? What does he not see coming that he should maybe take into consideration as he's considering that call?
Or, like, here's another way to put it, like, what's something that you didn't realize until you actually got into the seat?
One of the things that has been a part of my journey is I just thought I had an endless well for being with people. I'm an extrovert. I love hanging out with people. And pastoring and church planting has really shown me I have limits in that area, and I just didn't expect that aspect. You're called upon to practice empathy and to be compassionate in so many different directions that it drains you. I was thinking about the analogy of, like, I don't mind going to a concert. It's loud, but all of the noise is coming at me from one direction. But I will blow a gasket if all four of my kids are giving me noise from every different direction, because my attention's divided. And that's kind of how it feels sometimes as a pastor, caring for people and walking with them as they follow Jesus. You want to love them well, but it's just draining. So that's one thing. I didn't expect that my capacity as a relational leader would be so drained, which means I didn't expect to need things like Sabbath. I didn't expect to need things like boundaries for when I'm on my phone or when I'm answering my phone. That flows into another thing I didn't expect. I didn't expect the real vital importance of clear communication. So to dovetail with what I said before, you know, I have to constantly discipline myself to just be honest with people about what I have capacity for. So whether it's the person who wants to meet and I say, I have 4 meetings this week already and I need to be with my family, we need to push it to next week. Or it's the person who says, hey, I want to talk to you on a Sunday morning, and I have to say to them, I want to hear what you have to say, but whatever is going into my brain is not going to be there in 30 minutes while we're talking on a Sunday morning. You know, that kind of honesty is important, but it's also honesty. I've had to learn this at the vision level, communicating vision. Like, you guys have heard the quote, if it's a mist in the pulpit, it's a fog in the pews, related to preaching. For me, that's been about vision. I'm a big picture thinker, and I can just, like, get excited about the gut feeling about the direction I want to head in. And I've just had to learn clarity around vision is important. Otherwise, people will not go there with you. They can't catch what you're trying to envision if you can't see it super clearly.
I thought it was really self-aware of you to say that that was something that you maybe didn't realize, or you underestimated, that because you're such a people person. You walk into a room and you're like, you're larger than life. People love you. You know how to connect with people, and being able to even say, like, you realize doing this that there was limits to that. I thought that is really self-aware and a real mature response. And so let me, 2 other questions. When you say that to people, this notion of like, hey, I'm sorry, I kind of reached my limits, or whatever the whimsical way you put it, don't, because I found myself, I need to do that too. And that's a lesson I'm learning. But I'm finding people respect that. Like, I just told these two guys who wanted to meet with me about this really important topic. The only day that it seemed to be work was a day that was also like one of my, like a Sabbath day for me. And I just said, sorry guys, like that's time with my wife. And we had to push it back for like another like 6 or 7 days. And when we finally met, they both commented, hey, we really loved that you guarded that time. You said no to us, so you could say yes to your wife. Have you found that that's the case, that generally people receive that as like a positive thing, or are you dealing with more people who are just more needy and demanding of that time?
Honestly, it's a mixed bag. I've encountered people who really respect that honesty from me and understand it. I think we're in a culture that's growing in our awareness of self-care, which is sometimes abused, like that whole concept.
I think that goes with the 24/7 news cycle and social media always being on. I think we're having to confront with that, this, our own limitations, where maybe the last generation, those things were kind of already naturally built in because the news only came on at 6 to 7 at night. So you're getting a mixed bag. Here's the other question. This is more like related to church planting, I guess. You've obviously had a chance to rub shoulders with a lot of church planters. Would you say most of them are extroverted? It feels like a very extroverted endeavor. Have you found that to be the case?
No, not at all. Some church planters, some church planters are the type of extroverts, like they can turn it on. They can be catalytic people. Being an extrovert is not a requirement for being a church planter. You have to love people, but introverts can love people, and maybe introverts are sometimes better at doling out their resource of people time. For me, I have to exercise discipline by saying no, and introverts just have to exercise discipline by saying yes sometimes. So it's two sides of the same coin.
To that point, would it be fair to say, I was hearing you talk at the beginning of kind of talking about how you use your time, of if somebody thinks they're going to go into church planning and have all kinds of time to sit at a desk and study and write vision documents, would you say they should probably get a reality check?
Yeah, they should probably go work at Peace Church. They'll have time for it there, I think.
Oh, no, we don't let anybody do that here.
Yeah. Having time for anything as a church planter just, I think, is a vision of heaven. it's not what we get on the ground right now.
So to flip the coin just a little bit, if you were talking to a church that's considering planting a church and they're getting ready to do that, what would you tell them that they aren't planning on, aren't forecasting, don't see? If you're talking, for example, to us, maybe we should have had this conversation a year ago or something while we were getting ready to plant a campus in Wayland. But if you're talking to a church that's considering sending out a church planner to plant a church, what would you tell them that they're maybe not thinking of right now?
So here's the first thing that comes to mind. And let me relate it to just my own personal experience. When I am dealing with my flesh, and let's say I'm dealing with insecurities around, my status as a church planter or a pastor, I see a friend of mine preach a great sermon and a clip of it on Instagram. Well, part of me as his Christian brother is going to want to celebrate that. I believe in the goodness of a gospel-centered sermon. Another part of me in my flesh is going to be jealous because he got a cooler sermon clip on social media than I did. And so in that moment, if I'm going to drag that sin out into the light, then I want to practice celebrating that brother in such a way that my insecurity is squashed. And so let me relate that to the work of a church planting another church. A church planting another church is a beautiful gospel work. And if you're doing it, your congregation is going to be on board with it. It has to be. And your leadership has to be on board with it. And even if they are, there will be so many opportunities for insecurities to open themselves up. Like, oh, are they taking they're taking that many people with them to plant. They're taking those leaders. No, we want to keep those leaders for ourselves. They're going to go build a different brand than ours. Oh, maybe they should just kind of take our brand with them. You know, all so many opportunities to like let our flesh as a community show. And so my encouragement to a church planting another church would be lean into those insecurities in such a way that they are squashed. So celebrate when you thought you were going to send 30 people and you're sending 150. Like celebrate when the best worship leader from your church goes with the church plant. Give away more money than you should within wise reason. You know, celebrate the particularization of a congregation rather than the enlargement of your church's platform, like those sorts of things. Because we worship a God that says when things die, they come back to life in me. And so when we let our hopes for, we let our anxieties around, like, is our church going to survive because we're letting all these things go with a church plant? I think it's not a promise that all of a sudden things are going to be restored to you in this life in your church, but it is a promise that, you're going to see more of Jesus, as you embrace weakness. You know what I mean?
That's great. Ethan, thank you so much for this conversation and getting to talk. If people want to check out Union Church or stuff that you're up to, where can they look?
Yeah, you can search unionchurchmi.com. That's our website. But if you just search Union Church MI on Instagram or Facebook, you'll find us on social media. Those are the primary places to check out Union Church.
Well, thanks so much, Ethan, for the time. Thanks, Pastor Ryan.
Thanks, Pastor John. Ethan, always good to talk to you. Don't talk to you enough, man. Love you and miss you.
Love you guys too. Thanks for this opportunity.
Awesome. Hey, thanks everybody. Blessings as you lead out in the church.
Thanks for listening. If you found this episode helpful, share it with someone today. You can follow Regarding Leadership. Find more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. Regarding Leadership is brought to you by Round the Table, a ministry of Peace Church in Middleville, Michigan.